Okay.
All right. So I'm going to say a couple of words about...
And by the way, I'm expecting you to destroy the whole this whole argument we just had.
All right, that was going to be... I was thinking of saying how bulk objects arise in physics.
Which objects?
Bulk.
Okay, good.
And I'm trying to be a bit provocative at the end. So let's see. So the way most objects that we see around us arises is through a process that we call symmetry breaking. So if you look at this table, what's the broken symmetry? It's the symmetry of translation invariance. So if you have, if you look at the atoms in this table, they are all nicely ordered on a lattice. And if you look at the equations that we would write down to describe this this set of atoms, then you will find that there's nothing that singles out this position of the atoms at all. It's completely translation invariant, this thing. And so there's a puzzle that happens. Why a law that is completely symmetric comes and produces something like this? And It is kind of. I guess the point is why we don't wonder about that more often is because this is what we see these objects all around us all the time, right? So we put a glass of water in the freezer and it becomes ice, and we don't worry about that. Somehow nature picked out some position for these atoms, which is not given in the description of the laws. So it's somehow a very curious process. It's a very curious process, but it's veiled because its curiosity is veiled because it's so common. It's around us all the time. Okay, so what's special about this thing? So one thing is that it's very hard to calculate this thing. So it's very hard to go from one phase of matter to the next one. It's basically impossible to do that. So only if you're in a position where you know both sides, so you know the table and you know the ice block and you know the water, then you know what to look for, and then you can make some arguments. But it's basically impossible to do that, calculation. So that's one. But what is even more surprising, and that's now the interesting thing, is if for water and ice, we know both sides. We know the before and we know the after of the symmetry breaking. What's really interesting is if for some reason our common experience just gives us one, and then we discover the other. So something like superconductivity, for example, some new phase of matter that we didn't know before. That when we see something like that, we are surprised. We're surprised, and we don't know. And then there's a lot of work trying to explain what it is and trying to. And so these things are big events in physics when something like that happens. But I think the most surprising of all is here for symmetry breaking, we knew the before and then we discovered the after. But I think one of the most surprising events is where we knew the after and we built all our intuition, all our language, everything, we built on the after, and then we discovered the before. And that before is quantum mechanics. Then we are in this position and we look at this stuff which we completely don't understand. We look at it and we say, well, but it has to have this electron has to have a position or something, and it doesn't. And this electron has to have momentum, and it doesn't. And we make all these experiments and we're very confused about that. And we are confused because we build all our language, all our understanding on these properties which emerged one step up. And then we discovered this other thing, which was veiled to us for thousands of years of our existence. And we see it, and we're confused. We're completely confused. And this confusion is still going on. It's 80 years in the making, and there are still people who think that we have to... This is the true language is the one which is the language that comes down to us from Newton, and there should be positions and momenta, and we just don't see the right thing. There are people who say that that we have to have many worlds, and all these confusions are confusions because because symmetry breaking sort of is we don't see the importance of that. That it's possible that something as normal as position can emerge, something like that. Some common thing like position can emerge, and that's why we are so confused, and we're still discussing things like quantum mechanics in this confused way. So that's a way of an emergent. So in that sense, Newton's laws and all these things are completely emergent. They are emergent laws. Good.
So let me query and emphasize. Okay. So the universe, we believe, started hot, very hot.
Right.
So every property of every material, okay, that's not a plasma, came to exist for some first time. There was some first solid, some first liquid,
right,
etc. Okay. So any law that would govern any solid or liquid had a first moment of application.
That's right.
Okay. Now you're pushing us to go further and say all of classical physics, the notion that there's particles which have positions in space, that have trajectories, there was a first moment of time before which that would
not make sense.
Okay.
Right.
And you haven't said, but would you be willing to go further and say that the existence of space itself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is something that there was a
first moment where that makes sense. Yes.
I thought there was another theme in your remark, which was the theme of a residual facticity, that there were certain elements, factual elements, left over, like the position of the atoms in the table, but the laws did not fully specify.
Yeah, that's...
What I'm trying to understand is the relation in your presentation just now between the theme of emergence and the theme of brute facticity.
Yeah, I'm not quite... Can you say that again? So what is it?
So one theme is this theme that Lee just described, the theme of emergence. The laws... once did not apply, then they did apply, something happened.
Right.
Then the other theme is that even after they do apply,
right. They
don't specify everything. So, so my question is, what's the relation between the theme of facticity and the theme of emergence? What, for example, one way of thinking about the relation among many would be to say that the brute facticity that exists in the world after the laws apply is a kind of reminder or fossil of the condition of the world that existed before the laws began to apply.
So I'm not sure, because I'm just starting to think in this way. What happens, because we started with Newton's laws and built all physics from there, is that even when we do quantum mechanics, we label the states of quantum mechanics with these emerged objects, with these emergent properties. So we put the states and we put an X for the position in there, right? So that is just because we are human. Right? What else can we do, right? We don't know these things. So there's this thing that so position, the notion of position emerged, and we build all our intuition on that, and then we go back and we say things like this electron has all positions, but we start with the state that has sort of this position label in it. I'm not sure if that is. So there's this, there's, because we don't have anything else to go on when we make a step back, and then that's what we use. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's answering your question at all.
Can you say what you mean by the brutal facts or brutal facticity?
I'm wondering too.
Can you give an example?
I think you mean ontological.
What gets called
the furniture of the universe.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand here. But I thought that one of the ideas here was that even after the laws supervene and apply, there are certain features of the world that the laws don't explain. For example, the precise position
of
the atoms.
Okay, now I see. Yes.
But one might add other things, for example, the values of the parameters of the constants, which from the standpoint of the laws may appear to be arbitrary. So then the question I raise is, what is the relation between this feature of the world, which I'm calling crude facticity, and the other feature, which is the feature of emergence? And I'm proposing a conjecture, which is that one way in which the two features may be related is that the facticity is a projection into the world after emergence of what the world was like before emergence. So the law supervened, but the brute nature of the world before the appearance of the laws persists as a vestige in this element of brute facticity. But that's just one way among many to relate the feature of emergence to the feature of facticity. And it was just
there's this point with if you write down the equations, we don't know why. There's nothing in the equation that signals out the position of one of these atoms.
Yes.
And you're saying that this is a leftover from the other laws.
Or from the condition of lawlessness or whatever it was.
No, it's just a different. It's quantum mechanics, which is not Newtonian. So Newtonian doesn't know about.
Well. But I think, let me try this and then Simon. If space and position in space is emergent,
yes.
Okay, then there is a stage where it's completely, where the language of space, position, space would be totally meaningless.
That's right.
Then there's this stage here where it makes perfect sense and we do Newtonian physics.
Right.
In between is quantum mechanics,
right,
where position space has this peculiar structure, has this peculiar nature, where we still believe in it, but we believe that A, it's only probabilistic, or it has to be brought into existence by an experiment that asks for it. So this is a kind of transitional stage. It's not there at all. After sufficient time, it's just there unproblematically, and in between it's there problematically.
That's right.
And some people who want to, quote, interpret quantum mechanics,
right,
okay, try to enshrine the problematicity that it's there with, okay, but maybe it's just problematic because it's transitional. That is, and maybe this is what you're...
That's right, yeah, because you use the language from the higher level.
That's right. Simon, and then again, I'm going to cut this off. So,
I'm sympathy with what you're saying, Ian, and also with what you're saying, Olive, but I do detect a potential confusion. It may not be in your mind, but it is in the words. Let's be clear on something. This table is still translationally invariant. Translational symmetry is not broken by virtue of the structure of this table. The point is rather to recognize that this table is to be described in terms of relative distances. And these relative distances are invariant under translations.
Yeah, no, that's fine. No, but the point is, the point is, why is there one atom sitting here and not one angstrom next to it?
No, but that is surely a mistaken conception of... positions do not exist. There's just no such thing as absolute positions. What there are relative distances. So why is this atom here?
No.
You mean is, why is the relative distance between my finger and this atom?
No, this is good. I understand where you're going. But the problem, as I described it, is in the setting where I give myself this Newtonian space and I write down Schrödinger equation, and then there's a meaning to this position.
But I didn't believe that.
I think this kind of thinking is what one has to do now.
But one already has to do it within the framework of classical Newtonian mechanics. I mean, a correct understanding of classical Newtonian mechanics is one in which one quotients out the translations, and one looks only at relative distances. One looks at these invariant quantities. And likewise for rotations. And I think it's... I've heard Steven Weinberg, among others, say, for example, the distribution of stars breaks rotational symmetry. And I think this is just a mistake. It's not that the stars pick out an absolute direction. It's rather that there are relative directions as coded in the structure of the stars.
Good, but then I can rephrase it. The point is, I can rephrase it as a relative problem.
Okay, then do that. Let's rephrase it as a relation.
So if I take an experiment where let's take the ice cube again or something, right? And I set it up, and I have a lab table where I have measurement devices, lasers, and I want to make very precise measurements or something like that, right? So then, by these already solid objects, I set up this frame to which I can make relative measurements. And it is relative to this frame that the question already arises. Already, relative to this frame, I don't know. The equations don't tell me why the atom is going to be here and not there. And here and there means something now, right? Because it's relative to this.
Right. Why the relative distances are what they are. Sure.
Right. I mean, that's the first atom in this table here, or something like that. It's a, right. Or if you want to make it more precise, you can average it. And that thing has a relation to this floor and to that wall and right. And it is.
And why those relations and not others?
That's the sense in which it is a puzzle.
Yeah, sure. But that I agree. But I think the notion of symmetry breaking, I don't believe is the right idiom here. I
think this word.
There is symmetry breaking.
I think this word.
Let me take this as a disagreement statement and go on.
But I think we agree.
And then I'm going to cut us off at a quarter of by my watch.
What does your watch say now?
What?
What does your watch say now?
12 minutes. That's 12 minutes. And then we'll go to the discussion of what to do.
Okay.
We might have more time for this discussion, right? Where are we going to have an hour for?
We're then going to have an hour and 15.
Okay. So I hope I can do this in that time.